What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
A new report by Physicians for Human Rights reveals that over the past 2 years, up to August 2025, at least 94 Palestinians have died in Israeli detention facilities. The report is called Death Sentence for Palestinians in Custody. Joining us is Oneg Ben-Dror, who will correct me on their name pronunciation if I messed it up, who is from Physicians for Human Rights, Israel Prisoners and Detainees Department. Good morning. You're on mute, my dear.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. How did I do on your name? You want to tell the people how it's supposed to be said?
You said it right. Oneg Ben-Dror.
Wonderful. Yeah. I love it when I get it right. All right, let's jump right in because I only have you for a few moments. I know this is going to sound bananas coming out of my mouth because, of course, that's a lot of people. I expect the number to, and I know that there's a potential that there's an undercount that is stated clearly in the report. I guess I expected even in a higher number. Like when we're looking at the wanton sort of disregard for life and mass murder of Palestinians by Israel, were you surprised by the number 94? Are you surprised that it's actually an undercount?
So first of all, we in the report we covered only from October 2023 until August 2025, and only in the past months, four Palestinians died in Israeli prisons. So the official most updated number is 98. But again, as you said, we suspect that the number is the actual number is much higher because of the policy of enforced disappearance that Israel is applying against Palestinians from Gaza. Also, I would also say that we only counted the Palestinians who died inside the facilities in Israeli custody. There were many Palestinians who were taken, kidnapped, and were used as human shields in Gaza. And again, there is no information about the whereabouts and also people who were taken into custody. But again, because of this policy of enforced disappearance and because there are thousands of Palestinians from Gaza who are still missing, we still don't know the numbers. We know of hundreds of cases of people from Gaza, family members and eyewitnesses who said they saw the army taking this and that person. And so we will have to see with those dates. But what we know is, that's the highest official number, 98.
You mentioned enforced disappearance. I want to actually walk through three of the central policies that are lending themselves to this number. So can you say more about enforced disappearance? What is that? What does that mean? And why does that contribute to the numbers that we're talking about this morning?
Sure. So I would divide it also in, until May 2024 and after that. Okay. So basically in the first 7 months to the genocide, all the Palestinians who were taken under Israeli custody, we couldn't get any information about their whereabouts. They no lawyer visits and legal representation, and any appeal to the Israeli military and the Israeli Supreme Court, all the appeals were denied. The first appeal, and not only denied, even the court has fined basically the lawyers and the families. On May 2024, after again the state stated that Israel doesn't have the obligation to give information about the whereabouts of Palestinian detainees from Gaza. So only in May 2024, they actually decided to hold the first hearing. Until then, even we didn't reach a hearing. And 2 days before the hearing, the Israeli military provided an email address saying that if you write to this email address, you can get information about the whereabouts of the detainee, where they are being held, and you can also set a lawyer visit. But what we saw after that this system proven to have many failures, and we think it's also intentional failures of and another organization called Hamoked. They recorded about 400 cases where they got the answer that there was no indication for the arrest of that person. We got that case, even in very clear cases, we got it, this answer, even in the case of the arrest of Dr. Hussam Abu Safiyeh, that was well documented, unlike many other arrests. So we saw that it's not a system that you can really get an information, and people, even also there was a case of a father and son from Al Fakawi family. They were taken and they were used as a human shield. They were taken in from their home in front of their family members with another person, and that person was released. And for months, the Israeli army claimed that there is no indication for the arrest of them, only until there was a hearing and the lawyer brought a testimony from the person who was detained with them. And only then the Israeli military admitted that they hold them, and actually they died in custody. So there are several cases like that, and that's why it's very hard to track them. And I can say about, and it's important maybe to divide the Israeli custody in the past 2 years is now, it became two. Before that, it was only the Israeli prison service. Now it's also the Israeli military who are holding people for months in military camps. And the most official updated number from the Israeli military is only May 2024 from a freedom of information request that we needed to appeal to get it. It was a long process, and still we are trying to get the more updated number, and it's not easy.
Thank you for that explanation. So can you talk about the conditions? Because you talked about that, right? We're in two now. We've got the Israeli prisons, which I've covered a bit on this show about how horrific the conditions are. Can you talk a bit about, compare, contrast the conditions inside of military detention camps? I'm imagining these are just sort of pop-up, ramshackle facilities is probably too strong of a word.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that in general, and we, in general, it's an Israeli policy that started in the past 2 years of punishment through the conditions that the denying a freedom, the liberty of a person is not enough, but also punishing them through the conditions. So I would say that in general, in both the Israeli prison service, they changed overnight the whole conditions. It's not that they were, you know, good before, but they changed it overnight to be torture camps. And the Israeli military applied the same policy. And we are in all the detention facilities where Israel is holding Palestinian detainees, and I would say now that also Syrians and Lebanese, they are being tortured, starved, and denied of medical care. And that's all across the board. And that's why we also claim that it's a systemic killing. It didn't happen only in one facility. It happens in all detention facilities where Palestinian detainees are being held. And also, it didn't stop. It keeps happening, unfortunately. till this day, this policy. Yeah.
Attached to that, because I was actually going to go there, but the intentional policy, go ahead and tie that to Ben-Gvir, that this was his mandate, yes?
Sure. So Ben-Gvir, he became the minister who is responsible for the prison service in the earlier on 2023. Even before he became the minister, he was a purpose for him to make the lives of Palestinians in prison hell, and he tried to do it also to pass a death penalty law, which now is being passed. And when he got into the position, already denying them to different like to bake their own bread and different things, he wanted to deny family visits. And so what we saw after, and he didn't manage to pass it until basically October 2023. And what we see is that he applied it after. It was an opportunity for him to apply the policy. He wanted to apply it already earlier. And what happened in prison is that really in the first days after genocide started, they denied, so no family visits. It was very hard to get lawyers' visits also. Again, they changed the food for Palestinians that became very low quantity and poor quality. They stopped all the clinic, all the medical care, and we saw that they continued it in the other detention facilities where they're holding other detainees who are not Palestinians, who are political prisoners. And several, they denied the ICRC access to the facilities. They still deny it, even after the ceasefire. And again, also this policy of killing is continues to happen after the ceasefire. But what we see, so it was something that Ben-Gvir stated that he aimed to do, and he managed to apply it through, you know, policy on the ground, even without passing the law he tried to pass before. But I would say again that it's not only Ben-Gvir. I mean, he was very vocal about it. But again, we see the same policy in the Israeli military, and also higher up. So I would say it's an Israeli policy.
And thirdly, in terms of the three policies that are contributing to this skyrocketing number of Palestinians that are murdered in both prisons and military detention camps, the cover-up, which in a way I sort of find fascinating, because on the one hand you've got Ben-Gvir and other Israeli officials saying blatantly and loudly, right, that they plan to do what they plan to do to Palestinian lives, and then daring anybody to do anything about it, which of course nobody is, otherwise we wouldn't be here. And then on the other hand, the machinations that they go through to cover up what they are actually doing. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So what we saw, maybe I would start with saying that there are few, let's say, phases of the cover-ups. It started with not transferring bodies to the forensic institute where they're holding the postmortem, the autopsy. And we know from, again, a freedom of information request that we appealed to, that until the Israeli military didn't transfer anybody until at least March 2024. And we know that already at least 35 people died under the Israeli military in this period. By the way, if you've heard of Sde Teman, who became famous of the Israeli Guantanamo military camp, there 29 Palestinians from Gaza were killed. So the first step is not transferring the bodies to the autopsies. Then after even transferring, not notifying the family, so the family couldn't attend or send a physician to attend the autopsy on their behalf. to observe, and it's something that they deserve by law. But it didn't in the case of Palestinians from Gaza, there are still families, you know, that the relatives we know of at least 18 Palestinians who died that nobody knows who they are. So the family weren't notified until today. We think it's much more. In the case of the of prison service, and especially with Palestinians from the West Bank, also often they were notified in delays, so it was harder for the family to ask the court to have a physician attended on their behalf. And even when they asked, what happened is that the police didn't transfer the request of the family to the forensic institute. So often we saw that that they already did the autopsy, and the forensic institute wasn't notified of the family request. And it was again, it happened again and again. So it's hard to assume that it's not intentional.
Yeah.
And then the later stage is that when they performed the autopsies, they performed it in delays. And, you know, the body, even when the body is in the fridge, it's still harder to make the autopsy a week after.
It and still decomposes and you lose evidence. You lose. Exactly. Yes.
Right. So, and we saw that the average of performing the autopsy was about 2 weeks after. Okay. There was a case of a person that a month after they wanted to perform the autopsy, and then the forensic institute said already that there is no point of performing the autopsy over there, so the autopsy wasn't performed. And then, so that's let's say the third stage. And later is even, you know, even in autopsy, so in all out of 94 cases or only in 10 cases, physicians on behalf of the families managed to attend the autopsies. And in all of them, in five of them, there were clear signs of severe violence. And in six of them, clear signs of medical neglect. And we are talking about, you know, broken bones, internal bleedings. And in the autopsies that the physician on behalf of the family wrote summaries to the families. You know, there was a person who had like a digestive disease, and he needed a specific diet, a very simple thing to follow, and he was detained already before October 2023. Suddenly they stopped giving him the diet after that, and it was very clear that they wrote in the autopsy that he suffered for months until he died, and he was 20 years old. Mohamed Sabar, he died in Ofer prison. And so even in cases that it was very clear that from what they died, what was the cause, still we are not aware of any prison guard, any physician or a soldier that was indicted for the death cases.
Right.
Yeah.
Ona, we could talk for much longer, but I've got to leave it there. Thank you for your work.
Thank
I understand
you.
That you're in Israel, so thank you, thank you, thank you. We will follow this and have you back.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.